With us now, Amy Moritz. Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jay.
It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Let's do a little updating of your resume before we get going here. Of course, you were full-time at the Buffalo News for how many years?
For 19 years.
19 years. And now you're still with the news as the running columnist?
Correct, yes. I still do the running column at least once a month, sometimes a few more times. So I still am the running columnist there.
Okay. And now what about your other professional affiliations?
Yeah, so lots of transitions. So when I left the Buffalo News to go work in nonprofits, and I spent some time at Kevin Guesthouse on the medical campus, and absolutely loved my time working there. It's a fantastic organization. I then had the opportunity that I jumped at to become communications director for the Stained Glass Association of America, which had its headquarters in Buffalo. It's a very old organization. It was founded in 1903. Its headquarters has moved all around the country during that time, landed in Buffalo about 2 years ago. But as with all small cultural nonprofits these days, the profit margin is slim to begin with. And the pandemic certainly hit hard. So I'm on pause right now, looking at something to move forward to in the next few months. So I'm with a lot of other people in that sort of same boat right now.
In your case, on a personal level, your husband is, as we like to say it, and is on the front line of dealing with this pandemic. Isn't that right?
He is. My husband is a nurse locally in one of the hospitals and has been working on a COVID-19 specific unit. So we've had to change up our situation. We are very fortunate, and we know that we're very fortunate in the fact that my husband and I just got married about 7-8 months ago, and I was in the process of starting to sell my house. We had moved in together into his house. So my house wasn't on the market quite yet, so we still had it. So he's isolating himself and living up in my house, my old house, and I am living with his father. So kind of taking care of the 80-year-olds on my end, and then he's taking care of other people and other patients. He's doing fine. He's doing okay, getting through every day. But on a personal level, it's really hard. It's hard not to see your husband and to have your family broken apart while this goes on.
As you are aware, I've talked to now four of your former colleagues at the Buffalo News, Jerry Sullivan and Bucky Gleason, Tim Graham, and Bud Bailey, all, of course, just like you, although you do still maintain some presence with the news, but departed the news after, like you said, 19 years. Talk about that decision. Like you said, you went into nonprofit, so perhaps you were looking for something different. I know Bucky Gleason said the same thing. It was time for him to think about something different as well. What about you? Can you maybe take us through that metamorphosis that you went through of leaving something that you trained for and worked very hard at for a long time?
Sure. I mean, I have been at the news for 19 years, but 4 years previous to that, I was at the Olean Times Herald. So, more than two decades, my entire adult life has been spent in newspapers and daily print. Since I graduated from college. So it was definitely a change. It was something that had been coming for some time. I had been thinking about it, for a number of years and in kind of testing waters and seeing what was available and talking to different people and, maybe putting my resume out a little bit. And then I just kind of hit that burnout stage where it was getting to be a whole lot, and I needed something different. I needed to be fresh. I felt like I was not doing a great service to my job as in the current state that I was in, and I just needed to look for something else. And so that's when I kind of ramped up, my search to see what that next thing was. And I was always attracted to nonprofits. I had been volunteering for a long time in the community and some different agencies, and really felt called to move into that way. And I feel that journalism is a service industry. We are serving the needs of people as reporters. So it just was a different type of service that I was moving into. And as much as I love journalism and I love that job. There's something about having regular hours that was really appealing to me at this point in my life, to be able to know when I was going to be in, when I was going to be needed. That sort of stability was something that I was really craving at this point in my life after 2 decades of, you know, working at a moment's notice,
right.
Which was beautiful at its time, but it was time for me to move on.
When exactly did you leave the news as a full-time reporter?
I left in October of 2018.
Was there something, were things changing in the media industry? Because this is definitely something, again, I've been hearing from some of your former colleagues. The media industry or the media has changed considerably. The consumption of it has changed considerably. Did that in any way impact your sense of being?
It did. There's such an immediacy, and there's such a, you know, who's first with it? Who's first on Twitter? We have to get something up immediately in the social media age. And I'm not saying one is good or bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just different. So for me, the need to be immediate with what we had, as opposed to not even just being accurate, you know, I mean, obviously accurate is important, you know, so, you know, I'd rather, you know, there's the old saying, like, I'd rather be right than be first. And that's certainly true. And I feel like that was still true at the Buffalo News. We wanted to be accurate first before
right.
being, you know, accurate before, being able to say we were the first one. But still that immediacy didn't allow for some thoughtfulness. It didn't really allow for perspective. It didn't really allow for that time, you know, and it's a little bit of wistful back to mm-hmm. to the earlier days when, you know, something happened and you had, you know, 12 hours to deadline. So you had to get it done in those 12 hours, but you had time to develop. You had time to talk with people. You had time to even do some research before your story hit. So you were able to provide some more depth. And I think that in the current climate of media, newsrooms are getting smaller, which means that you have fewer people. So the breaking news is the breaking news, and then you leave it, and because then you have to go on to the next thing because you don't have the person who can handle the immediate announcement of the news on social media and websites and that sort of thing, and then another person can kind of take it deeper. You don't have that depth of the bench anymore. And I think that really changed a lot.
Wow.
In my time there.
That's really, I mean, as you were relating that, you could feel, not necessarily in your voice, but I could feel it inside me, that just the kind of a tension that develops. That there is, you know, there's always obviously a lot of pressure on a reporter. There's no doubt about that when you have to put your byline in the paper the next day. But like you said, working with that sense of immediacy, I think somebody told me, maybe Bud Bailey, that said, the deadline is now. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. The deadline is now. And, I mean, there would be times. I lived up in Niagara County, so I would be driving to Buffalo Sabres practice. And something would happen on Twitter, and I would have to pull over and deal with it on my drive in. I couldn't take my, you know, 40 minutes to drive in. I had to pull over and get that done right away because I would have, you know, people texting me and telling me I had to get this done. And so, you know, my hotspot on my phone got a lot of use. I knew a lot of, you know, my computer can go to any Tim Hortons and immediately hook up to a Wi-Fi pretty much. But there was, the deadline is now. It had to be immediate. And so, you know, I remember talking with a colleague and he's like, I like to just once go and get my hair cut and not have to like worry about it. I had instances where I would be going, I was dating, you know, my husband and I were dating at the time. We'd go to the movies and I'd have my laptop with me because I was waiting for something to happen that was going to happen with the Sabres or the NHL. And I'd have to duck out into the lobby and take care of that and then come back into the movie. So there's never a time anymore where you're really allowed to relax. And that can get, I think that can be very difficult on people and very difficult on reporters, especially when you weren't brought up in that for that type of environment.
Let me ask you this then. You use the term wistful in terms of kind of looking back, but let's look forward just a little bit right now. And do you have any advice for the consumer of the news, of the sports news, of media? Because like you said, there's that pressure is there because there are so many entities involved in what is being consumed these days. Do you have some thoughts about that?
I guess look beyond Twitter. I mean, Twitter is great for like immediacy and to kind of know what's going on. Even then, at times, I might be out. I'm like, I just want to know what the score in the Bills game is, and I'm trying to scroll through Twitter. Just tell me the score. That's not even just that. But Twitter is great. Like for that kind of immediacy, you kind of might see the buzz of something that might be going on. But there are even at my old stomping grounds at the Buffalo News, there are people doing really, really great pieces. You just have to search it out a little bit to find it and to read beyond. And if you're a consumer of sports media and that's the type of stuff that you want, then that's the type of stuff that you need to click and you need to share and you need to tell people that you appreciate them. As a sports writer, I always knew when I screwed something up. I always knew when I wrote something that people were not interested in, but rarely did I hear someone say like, this was great. Thank you for this. I did. I won't say I never heard it.
Right.
But when you hear that and when editors hear that that's what's important, then that's what then ends up getting more coverage. So it's that, if you want more of something, then you need to consume that and share that. And then that's what people are responding to, what's getting clicks, what's getting traffic. That's what things are, that's what's driving a lot of decision-making. At least it was when I left 2 years ago.
Right.
Things change all the time, but that was the current state, that really what people were clicking on was driving a lot of then how coverage went from there.
Right. That's interesting, though. So your thought is, both from a practical and maybe a supportive situation, that if you really do like what somebody is doing, really, like, of course, is such a big social media term, but but if you really do like that, that is something that's a worthwhile activity. It's not just a matter of just doing it for the sake of doing it, but there could be a substantial results from sharing these types of pieces.
They could. The metrics drive coverage these days, and I think that that's one of the things that a lot of people, my quote unquote generation, who came up in newspapers pre social media, it's hard to it's kind of a little bit hard to wrap our head around.
Right.
I mean, not that we can't, but it's a shift, and when the way you consumed the newspaper was in print and you picked up a newspaper, right? You knew how the sales of the newspaper were. We didn't know what you read. We didn't know which stories you read, which stories you didn't read. We didn't know what got what more interest than other things, other than anecdotally what people might say or surveys or market research we might do. But now we have immediate feedback. We have metrics. We know that if you go to buffalonews.com and we know that if you only click on Buffalo Bills stories about the draft, then we're going to give you even 10 times more stories about the Buffalo Bills in the draft. If you want to read more, but if you're not clicking on college sports, then we're not going to put our resources on college sports, especially today, because our newsroom is so much smaller than it used to be. So we don't have those resources to do that. So where are we going to allocate our resources? So it's different in that people on the other end can see exactly what it is that is you're reading and what you want and what you want to read. That's how they're gauging what you want to read, by what you're clicking and sharing. So if you are wanting something different in the coverage, then that's what you really kind of need to be clicking and sharing and encouraging other people to read. Because if you change the metrics, then you can help.
What about the running column? This really, I think, plays very nicely into some personal history for you as well. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you came into running maybe a little bit later on in your life. And then you really, if I also understand this correctly, really, really, really committed to it. You became quite the runner, and triathlons and things along those lines. So how about the running column? How do you enjoy that?
I really enjoy that. It's a lot of fun. It's a community that I've grown to really love.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, I came into running, I always say late in life. I had a friend who called me an adult onset athlete. Whenever I tell my story, I'm like, well, I started running in my 30s. And then I've got people who are like, well, I didn't start running until I was 60. And I'm like, okay, so later is relative, right? Speed, all of it, it's just all relative. But I came into it later, and actually, as I started running, like really running, I would do some run walking, and always liked to be active. But did some, like, really looked at running when I wanted to do my first sprint triathlon. And as I was doing that, Steve Jones was the editor, the sports editor of the Buffalo News at the time, and we created this like first person journey that I did, journey to the finish line, about how I would train and get through to my first. To my first triathlon, and I found that I loved it, and so I kept doing triathlons, and then I got into some distance running and really just enjoyed the whole process. And so being able to write about it, and it's different because I'm in the running community. I do races. I run with some groups. I run with some friends. So the people are great. I mean, the people just always make the job so much better.
And does it give you a little more time? Since it's not a day in and day out beat, obviously, must give you a little more time to do it. That must be enjoyable, I would think.
It is, you know, and not having the pressure to get it done, squeezing it. I mean, I'm obviously working it into my own schedule, but not squeezing it around just other interviews or stories that I have due that day or whatever. Does make it easier for me. It makes it nicer for me to reflect, to find some better stories. Now, whatever story might come just across me first and is easiest, which is sometimes what happens. That's just the reality of human nature. But I have some more time to talk with people and go a little bit more in depth into some stories.
You do a blog as well, or you were doing a blog. I haven't checked it in a while. Is that still the case?
I am still doing a blog. It is at amymoritz.com, and so it's doing my own writing. It's mostly personal on my blog posts.
Most certainly is personal, but does you seem like you're always more than willing to kind of share the journey with people? What motivates you? Some of the struggles you might go through. Is that an accurate description?
That is. That's definitely an accurate description. I really have no problem sharing and kind of being vulnerable in my words. I've always said that, you know, writing for me is how I make sense of the world. So by writing is how I come to understand a lot of things that are going on in my life or around my life and things like that. And it can be deep. It can be funny. It can be any sort of range of things. I enjoy that. I enjoy sharing things that frustrate me or that motivate me or how I got through something or a perspective that I've gained or even just something that's simple as a laugh. Because I feel like, and that's one of the reasons why I went into journalism in the first place. Like, I think that we all have stories. And when we share our stories, I can read someone else's and be like, oh my gosh, I know exactly what she's talking about. I know exactly what that guy is going through. Oh, I get it. Or I could be like, well, that's completely different. I have a completely different reaction to that, but that's interesting. And now I've learned another view that someone might have. So I just feel there's so much power in sharing your story. And that's one of the things that I love to do on my blog is to share my story and my journey with other people and give them whatever, whether it inspires them or motivates them or they feel a little connected or they see a different way to look at something. That's kind of what motivates me to write that.
Do you write every day?
Right now I'm writing 3 days a week. So my goal is to post things on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
I want to get into another aspect of your career. This is something you and I have never had a chance to talk about, but I've, again, seeing some things on your social media over the years and one of those things, I'm sorry, I never really noticed, I guess. And that's the role of being a woman reporter in the sports world. I have the sense that you have a lot of deep feelings about that.
Oh, yeah, I do. I have a lot of things that I can say about that. When I was hired at the Buffalo News, it was myself. There were some women in TV, too, at the time. It was myself and Mary Jo Monin, who covered high school, and Lisa Wilson, who was a deputy sports editor, eventually rose to then become, executive sports editor at the Buffalo News. And that was a very proud moment for me to be able to work for her. But then there was a time where I was the only reporter, the only female sports reporter in Western New York. There was a time when none of the TV stations had one. Then there was a time when it was myself and Heather Pruzak when she was at Channel 2. There were, most of my career, I was the only woman in the room many, many times. And there's just a lot of things that you notice, and there's a lot of different ways in which you try to negotiate that sometimes. And I see some of the younger women, the next generation below me, who are coming up after me, not below me, who are, and especially the ones who are in television, and they just call it out. Like when I was coming up, you would never call out that this was maybe sexist. You would really have to have a whole lot. It would have to be a big time thing in order for you to say something. You just had to kind of hold it in and go about your business, because otherwise you would be a troublemaker and no one would want to hire you. And can't you just get over it? And can't you just take a joke? And I would start to speak up, but I would have to be very careful. And I see younger women today who are like, well, no, this is not right. And you can't say that to me. And a lot of times it comes from, sadly, it comes from other male reporters in the room.
Really?
And sometimes it does. You know, there's a lot of times where you have that, or it's veiled. It's not overt, but it's there. And it's kind of low level. And it can make doing your job very difficult, make you doing your job just tiresome and uneasy. Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, so there's a lot of things that kind of go with that. And
right.
I'm so happy to see younger women who they'll call out people on Twitter who say nasty things in their mentions.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes, I'm upset that they have to do that still. But to see them take that power and to be like, that's not okay, and you can't say that to me. And then to see the male reporters who stick up for them, that also makes me happy to see that as well. The other aspect to, being a female in sports reporting is covering women's sports. And it was something that I was always passionate about. And I remember being cautioned at one time in my career that to be careful about covering women's sports, because then I would be pegged as the girl who covers women's sports.
Mm.
I'd be the girl who covers girls' sports. And I got to a point, though, where that was fine for me, because if I didn't cover them, then right. Nobody else was going to do it.
Right.
Nobody else was going to see that as being valuable. And I knew that it was valuable, and I knew that they were great athletes, and I knew that there were great stories to tell there, and that it was important. So it didn't matter to me that I wasn't covering the Buffalo Bills, but that I was covering something that I felt really – they were good stories that needed to be told. And so that was definitely something that I had to think about, and I had to think about how I wanted to approach that. Yeah. I'm sorry. There's just a lot of things.
No, I'm without probing too deeply or trying to, reach too deep into a wound here, but I mean, is there a story that you like to relate or that you feel comfortable relating that kind of sums up what that feeling was like sometimes, where perhaps maybe, like you said, you were, I'm going to use the word marginalized. I don't know if that's the right word, but by whether it be another a peer, a journalist, or perhaps somebody in a locker room or somebody in a team organization. Is there something that stands out or maybe kind of would serve as is a great example of what you mean here?
I think it's hard because I think that, for me, everything was very subtle. So mm-hmm. to be like, well, here's an example and here's an instance, is challenging because it was just little types of things that, and attitudes and just ways in which people interacted with you, that would make you feel like you were on the outside. But I do have one story that kind of shows like both sides of this, mm-hmm. A little bit. And it was the very first, women's Frozen Four. So the first, NCAA championship for women's hockey.
Okay.
I can't remember the year. I'm sorry about that, but it was being held in Minnesota. And I had somehow, I don't know how, but I had talked my editor into letting me go and cover this. At the time Niagara had, Niagara University had Division I women's hockey. And actually they would go the next year to the Frozen Four. But I'm like, we have all these girls who play ice hockey in Western New York. Like, we should go. I convinced them to go and they sent me and they're like, all right. And this was how long ago it was. It was the Monday sports section used to be the tabloid
right,
side.
Right.
Like for those
mm-hmm.
right. And so like, okay, well you go there and you get a whole bunch of stories and come back and it will be like the center spread of the Monday that you come back. Okay, great. So I go and I work really hard and I come back with all of these stories and I felt like I had done this really great job. It was the first time out there and I'm so excited and I come back and everybody's just flat. Like nobody says anything to me.
Mm.
Like nobody acknowledges. Like it's just like, oh, like it was like, all right, it's your job. Okay. You want a reward? You got your paycheck this week. Like it was just very like nothing, and I wasn't looking for balloons and streamers and
right.
a cake, but just like, hey, really nice job. Like that was really interesting. Anything. And so I felt a little defeated. I mean, that was a big deal to have them send me out to Minnesota and cover this. And I got like not even negative feedback. I got zero feedback, which I felt that was kind of worse because you felt like nobody even didn't register for anybody.
Wow.
And then I was in the Buffalo News office one day, shortly after, it was a couple days after it had run. And there was a phone call for me, which was always nerve-wracking because nobody ever called me in the office. Like the reporters are hardly ever in the office. So no one, if someone's calling looking for you, that's usually the sign that they want to complain. And so I hesitantly pick up the phone, and it was this woman who was telling me the story about her daughter who played on a hockey team. But at the time, this was before, there was no Section 6 girls ice hockey. There was no varsity ice hockey. They played on club teams from different schools would come and play on teams. And her team had won a regional championship or won a state championship, did something really, really great. And she's like, her daughter came home deflated because the morning announcements go on and they're announcing all these people, how they did in all of these sports, and nobody mentioned her hockey team at all. And her mother's trying to, explain, well, maybe it's because there are girls from other schools on the team. Maybe they just don't know. She's trying to bolster her daughter up, who's really pretty low, who feels like nobody cares. She's like, Mom, nobody cares. That day was when my stories from the Women's Frozen Four came out. And she showed it to her daughter. And she said, no, look, people do care. Mm. People do care. What you do is valuable. And I always remember that story because I was so grateful that that woman just called to tell me that, because that's at the end of the day what I would hang my hat on, was that if one person was able to see themselves reflected in the newspaper who previously didn't see themselves reflected in the newspaper, that could make an impact and that could make a change. And so even though I had a flat reception by a whole lot of, white men that I work with, I had a positive impact on at least this one person. And so that would kind of balance out all of the other pettiness that could go on sometimes.
It's interesting, as you're also saying that, I could feel something that you know so very well. It's not always just getting assigned to do certain work, but the effort that you have to do, have to go through to sometimes get your concept, your idea, your vision into the newspaper. And it sounds like you really had to, like you said, work for that. And that's, I guess, why it's somewhat understandable that you didn't get, when you didn't get a lot of response, it was a little demoralizing.
Yes, yeah, it was a lot of work, and you know, in a lot of ways to get things in and to get things done. And so, because you've put all that effort in, and then to have again no reaction at all, and it's, you know, everybody needs, I think all humans, you need a little, you know, atta girl, atta boy, you need just a little pat on the back every once in a while to be like, hey, that was good. This, everybody knew this was a big deal.
Right.
To kind of go and do that. So I think that void is, that's worse than negative. That's worse than someone say, well, you know what, you could, what would have been better.
Right.
Is that silence is makes you kind of wonder. It's, you know, like that whole tap the microphone. Is this thing on? Is anybody listening? Is anybody there? Type of thing.
Yeah, that sounds really, that part.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just to kind of follow down that lane there a little bit. I mean, so it sounds like you're very hopeful for women in sports journalism moving forward here.
I am. I'm very hopeful. There's a lot of women in the last decade who have gone into the business, print and print television, sports information, like all aspects of it. Who have gone in, they're very confident, they're very self-assured, they have a good support system. There's still not enough representation, I don't think. I think there definitely could be more. And people who do the hiring can be better at that. There still aren't a whole lot of women at the decision-making level of those media organizations. They're not running sports departments, so they're not making those hires, or not seeing the need for diversity. But it's getting better. It's definitely getting better, and the women of this generation that are coming up are doing amazing things. They're amazing storytellers, and they see things differently. And I think that that's important, because the more perspectives you get, the better. So my perspective is going to be different from somebody else's, because my life experience is going to be different. And the more different life experiences that you have, even covering the same event, you get different people who take away different things, who see different things, who see things differently. And then there are great stories that follow from that.
Wow, that's well stated, that's for sure. You've written a book, of course. We actually had you in here talking about it a couple of years ago when the book came out. What about moving forward? Is that something you want to continue to try to do? Any thoughts about your writing moving forward?
I haven't thought specifically about, you know, writing another book, but I definitely, so I have no plan for it, but it's definitely something that I will think about doing and would enjoy doing again. So there's nothing in the works, but that's certainly something that is a probability, mm-hmm. that I will write another book. Right now I'm enjoying writing my blog posts and exploring some things about, you know, what it means to be home during COVID-19 and what it means to, there's lots of things kind of going on and swirling around my world like everybody else has going on right now too. So in flexing my creative muscles in that way, I'm really enjoying getting back into regular blog writing. So that's where my writing's going in the immediacy right now.
Mm-hmm. And so no plans for the great American novel?
No plans yet, but everyone that I think ever writes somewhere has that great American novel in the back of their head somewhere. So
right.
You never know.
Absolutely. What do you see on the horizon as best you can? You know, you've seen tremendous change. I mean, like you said, you started off at the Olean Times-Herald. I lived in that area for a few years and remember a robust paper, thick editions, not really like that anymore. The Buffalo News, I guess we could also give it the same description, couldn't we, here to a certain extent. What do you see?
I think in general, what concerns me moving forward is this sort of growing mistrust trust of the media, the whole fake news, hashtag fake news trend, concerns me overall. Obviously, that's most seen in political coverage, mm-hmm. but it's also seen, you know, a lot of times it seeps over into the sports media world. And for the most part, you know, 99% of sports writers and people in sports media are really just trying to do the best they can with where they are and with the resources that they have, and the constraints that they have. So that concerns me. I do worry about shrinking staffs and greater responsibility, all across the board. But you know, I see, you know, media has always been adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
We've always been able to change and roll with the punches. Sometimes it's clunky, and it's clunky in a lot of ways right now, especially in the print business. But, you know, media survives and will carry on. And so I don't know what's going to come in the future, but I'm excited to see what comes next. There's some very, very talented young people, millennial, Gen Z, who are coming up, who have some great ideas and great use of the current technology. So to see what they're able to do and how they're able to hone and refine the mediums that we have right now, I think it's going to be really exciting to see.
Wow, that's very hopeful. I appreciate those thoughts for sure. Amy Moritz, I really appreciate all your time. I know you're tremendously busy these days. You've got a lot on your plate, and I thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jay.